everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the program. We are off and running on this Monday, February the 6th, 2023. And the Buckmaster Show, in our 13th year now with the radio project, 35 years in this market on TV and radio. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. The radio station is 1030. The Voice, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. We piggyback the live feed from kvoi.com. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Last month, we launched a new way to start the week here on the show. We call it the Monday One-on-One, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run. Since 1985, Moe and his family specialize in custom frame mirrors. We've got a couple of them in our home. They are beautiful. He's got some wonderful art. Moe is a wonderful photographer. They excel with any kind of picture framing. And in fact, I've got some work over there right now that's being framed. And then if you don't want to put it up on the wall yourself, you want Moe to come out, do it right. He is a specialist in hanging services and hanging systems. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. All right, our Monday one-on-one today is with Jim Cantrell, CEO and co-founder of Phantom Space Corporation, which builds space transportation technology. It's Tucson's newest small rocket startup. It's already expanding into a new space with plans for its first orbital flight next year. Phantom Space Corporation was founded by SpaceX veteran Jim Cantrell. Yes, Jim did work with Elon Musk in the early days. That was an interesting time, and Jim's going to tell us all about it. Part of it is talked about in his new book. The book is titled The Inside Story of the Space Race. Mr. Cantrell, as I say, early member of Musk's SpaceX team, and he hopes the new company, Phantom Space, will become the Henry Ford of the space industry, using mainly off-the-shelf components to mass-produce rockets and space vehicles. Jim Cantrell, great to have you back with me.
Always good to be here, Bill.
Well, why don't we talk about the story of the new space race? What is the new space race, Jim?
Well, to talk about that, you have to go back to the beginning of the space age, which was really in the 50s. And at that point, it was a nation-state-dominated activity. I wouldn't even call it an industry at that point. And with the launch of Sputnik in 1957, the first satellite, the whole world woke up to what you could do in space. And this thing, you imagine the hysteria we had from the balloon this last weekend. Well, the hysteria was much more severe with the first satellite that was flying over that the Soviets had launched and could see everybody, and we could do nothing about it, whereas the balloon, we could at least shoot it down with a missile. And so that became a competition of nation states, culminating really in the Apollo mission to the moon, which was something that President Kennedy challenged the Soviets to, and we won it. So it was seen as a way to validate capitalism versus the Soviet communist system. What's happened in the last 20 or 30 years is gradually commercial use of space has come into play. That is in addition to military and civilian space uses like NASA does for science. And today, it's well over half of what's going on in space is funded by commercial means.
It's now up to half?
Half, yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's an extremely large part of the overall dollars spent. And most of that money is raised privately through venture capitalists and other sorts of investments.
So your particular with Phantom, the kind of the hot trend, I understand, in your business, in the rocket business, is something called ride share launches. And you're kind of swimming against the tide in this area. What are you doing different?
So what happened is satellites became smaller and smaller. They used to be the size of a bus. Now they're the size of a loaf of bread or smaller. And the rockets that were available to launch them were very large, really made to launch astronauts. And as a result, the only practical way to launch these was to put them on as ride-alongs. So it's like if your uncle was driving to Chicago, you all
can I hit your ride? Right.
Yeah, we get in the back seat and you go where your uncle's going when he's going.
Yeah.
So what we've come up with is the notion that there's another competing economic system to what SpaceX is doing. They're doing a marvelous job at it, but they're also focused on the very large ones. They just happen to be doing the small ones as well. We're saying that over half of the satellites that have launched have been less than 1,000 pounds. Last year, that's where it broke that half mark. So we want to service that industry by individually launching those satellites. So we're going to give them their own car. We're going to give them their own taxi. We're not going to put them on a bus. We're not going to put them on an airplane.
Are they reusable?
The reusability will come in later on our rockets, but initially they're throwaways. But we'll be building them in the hundreds a year, which is not a lot to manufacture, but it's a lot to launch. That's really where the challenge is. Is launching them.
What about financial backing for Phantom Space, which is a Tucson company?
Yeah, so we've been very quiet about what we've done.
Right.
We started in 2019, and we really haven't announced much about our finances, but we've raised about $25 million to date, and we're about to close a $65 million Series B probably in the next few weeks, despite the markets, which I can tell you it's been a feat to do it in this market. But it just speaks to both the value proposition that we have, and then it also speaks to the idea that we have an industry that's extremely valuable. And with the war in Ukraine breaking out, the military sees the value of commercial space as well as just the financial.
Your last Tucson-based rocket startup was a company called Vector. And you guys tried a proprietary rocket engine technology. It didn't quite work out. A major investor withdrew its support. Jim Cantrell, was there a lesson that just jumps out at you when you think about the whole Vector experience? And that might be how some people in the Tucson market really first heard about you.
Yeah. Yeah, so there are a lot of lessons there. I mean, you can't go through that without learning a lot. In fact, that was, I would say, one of the reasons many of my friends and my wife in particular said that really needed to finish the idea that I had started, because Vector was my idea, and I'd learned so much that why let that go to waste? Mm-hmm. And so I was gradually persuaded to do this. But there's a couple big lessons. One, You have to be very careful about who your founders are. That's the number one lesson, right? Your other co-founders. It's almost more intimate than a marriage, believe it or not.
I can imagine.
And if even these people I knew for 20 years weren't people I knew. And when things got tough, their reactions weren't what I thought. And I found myself outnumbered in what I thought was the right thing to do. And therefore, we had a proxy fight and a split up. That caused the investors to run off. Second lesson I learned was you never spend a penny of money until absolutely the last minute of the last second of the last day that you have to have it, right? So you put everything off that you can that you don't have to spend today. And then the big third lesson, we started with a clean slate on the technology side, and we asked ourselves, was SpaceX right in today's market to build everything themselves? Because that's one of SpaceX's secrets from 20-some-odd years ago, was we build everything ourselves, the engines, the fuselage, everything. But now there's a supply chain out there. For example, we're buying our engines from a company in Colorado. They're cheaper and better than we can build them, and we have a 5-year supplier agreement with them. So that took several hundred million dollars off of what I had to raise and years of development. So that was the big thing. And so what we've got today is a much smaller, tighter group of people who are very like-minded and are making great progress. We're further ahead today at Phantom than we were at the time Vector fell apart, and we've only spent $25 million getting to this point.
All right, there'll be more with Jim Cantrell, who is our Monday one-on-one interview. When we come back, Jim will talk about, the new book, Inside Story of the of the new space race, and we'll talk about Jim's days as first vice president with Mr. Musk when he founded SpaceX. Right now, I want to talk about our favorite bakery in town. It's Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's is open Tuesday through Sunday. They open at 6:30 Tuesday through Saturday, then Sunday, 7 a.m. I had a cinnamon roll yesterday. I think this is the largest cinnamon roll that I've ever seen, Jim. I think it could have been used for a Frisbee. I don't even know. I've never seen anything so big. It was a giant cinnamon roll from Mona's Danish Bakery. You could cut it up in pieces, and there would probably be enough for a family of four or five people. Anyway, I have rediscovered my love of cinnamon rolls at Mona's Danish Bakery. Website is monasdanishbakery.com. They're at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. More with Jim Cantrell. It's the Monday One-on-One, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you interested in sailing on an all-inclusive luxury cruise, trekking on an expedition adventure, or relaxing on a tropical beach? Then join us on February 26th at the Hilton El Conquistador as Bon Voyage Travel hosts our free travel showcase. Over 35 representatives from the world's best travel brands will be on hand to help you discover all the world has to offer. The Bon Voyage Travel Showcase, February 26th. Be sure to visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This is the Monday one-on-one presented by our friends at Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. The Monday one-on-one today, Jim Cantrell, CEO and co-founder of Tucson-based Phantom Space Corporation. And Jim Cantrell also has his first book, and I screwed up the title in the first segment. I was only doing the back end of the title. The full title, here it is, Breaking All the Rules, the inside story of the new space race. Mr. Cantrell was first vice president. He went to work for Elon Musk in the summer of 2001, spent about a year and a half with him. Did Elon just call you out of the blue? How did that work?
Yeah, it was a complete call out of the blue. It was a Friday afternoon.
Cold call.
Cold call in July. Nobody told me he was calling. He'd gotten my number from Bob Zubrin, who is the founder of the Mars Society, and had been talking to him. And he called me and he said, hey, you know, I'm this internet millionaire and I want to do this mission to Mars, and I need a Russian rocket because I can't afford American rockets, and I'm told that you can help me. And I had the top down on my car, and I said, yeah, I can help. But
because of your connections to you with the Soviet space program?
Right. I'd started my career off.
It wasn't really the Soviet at that point. It was still the Russian program?
Well, in 89, when I started with the French Space Agency, it was the Soviet Union.
Okay.
And it was a project to Mars that we were working on with the Soviets. And then the Soviet Union fell apart. In fact, in my book, I talk about how we were in country when that happened and the trials and tribulations there. And then afterwards, I came back to the U.S. And then I went back in for 6 years into the former Soviet Union on behalf of the U.S. government to stop brain drain. So I'd become a bit of a Soviet or Russian rocket expert, because we had converted some of these ICBMs that used to be pointed at us into satellite launchers. And so that's what Elon had heard from Bob, and that's why he called me. So,
and he wanted you. And then how'd you two get along?
Well, we got along famously when I was consulting for him, and once I became an employee, it totally changed. I can't explain why, but suddenly it was almost as if I were a slave. And he would call me at 3 in the morning and ask me where I was, and my answer would be, I'm in bed, I'm sleeping. And he would say, I'm at work, you should be here, you know. So it was kind of crazy. There was a good Elon and a bad Elon, and he's one of the most charming people in the world. But on the other hand, when he's bad, he's really miserable to be around. And
As many Twitter employees would say, he is miserable.
A lot fewer Twitter employees.
A lot fewer.
Yeah, his actions at Twitter are completely classic Elon.
There's nothing
about what he's done that I'm surprised by.
Why?
Well, he believes in just terror efficiency, right? He doesn't want anything that's fluff in his business. And so that he got rid of half of the people he considered fluff wasn't a surprise. He hired some back. He's like, oh, I made some mistakes. But then he's focused on the engineering side of it. And that is not a surprise either. And he's brought in a lot of his people from other enterprises, exactly what he did at SpaceX. And it's a classic Elon move. And I think he'll be successful in the end. It looks messy as hell right now, but I think he'll get there.
His thing about free speech, what was his take on that?
Well, interesting, when he called me back in July, one of the things he told me was there were three things in his life he wanted to accomplish. One was to make humanity multiplanetary. So we see that with SpaceX and other things that he's doing. Second was to get humanity off its addiction to fossil fuels. So we see Tesla, we see solar power, so on. And then the third thing was he wanted to stop the ability of tyrants to stop free speech around the world. Now, that was a little more vague, but now we see what he meant in terms of him being a free speech absolutist. He's not lying.
Has he been – you mentioned earlier that private enterprise has now about half of the pie here for space work in the United States, and he's a big factor in that, correct?
Oh, yeah. We owe this to SpaceX and Elon in particular. There were a lot of people who tried to do this before Elon. A guy named Andrew Beal, for example, out of Texas, not a billionaire quite, but almost banker. He spent $100 million of his own money and failed at it. Then Elon comes in and says, well, I'm going to do this. And he's got absolutely no background in it. No expectation on anybody's part that Elon would do it, but he did. And he's made space safer investing. He's brought launch costs down. He's brought the ability to launch stuff much easier than it used to be. And now he's got this the Starlink satellite constellation bringing broadband internet to the entire world. It's really pretty remarkable.
All these satellites that we keep putting up into space, is there a worry about space junk?
Yeah, there's about 8,000 satellites there now. There's a lot of other objects. It's in the hundreds of thousands of objects of, you know, left over. So there's a worry about space junk, but it's important to understand that that's not an absolute problem. So if, as you get closer to the Earth, Mother Earth tends to scrub the objects out, even though they're at a very high energy. The atmosphere still exists at, say, 400 kilometers, and it will gradually, through friction, bring it back down, and you have things that reenter. Mm-hmm. We've all seen, you know, space stations that reenter and things like that. That does occur naturally. So it's these very high altitude orbits that last 100 years or more, where you're putting rideshare objects in them by the hundreds. That is the problem area. And there will probably be an insurance regulatory reform that addresses this. Plus, this is one of the things we think at Phantom is going to drive people to our kind of launch, where they can replace things a little more frequently and launch into these lower altitude orbits.
I want to ask you about the Chinese balloon that everybody is the big dust up about. That. Why? What kind of technology could the Chinese get from a balloon that's 60,000 feet that they could not get by satellite?
Yeah, it's probably not much, you know, for given the amount of money you spend, that would be the primary lever that you go for lower altitude balloon flights. But, you know, imaging, you can, you know, eavesdrop on electronics communications. One thing you could do there that sort of worries me is an EMP device, so electromagnetic pulse, just like a nuclear weapon puts off. It doesn't have to be nuclear. There are ways to generate that without a nuclear explosion. So it could be something like that. I really doubt it's that, and it's probably, you know, photographic. We, you know, the U.S. did this for years over the Soviet Union. This has been going on for a long time. This is nothing new. The fact that it created this hysteria was a byproduct of the news saying, "Hey, here it is," and everybody could look up and see it. It was an amazing psychological event for me. Mm-hmm. Not so much a threat, because most of what you can see from this balloon, you can see from a satellite anyhow. And trust me, the Chinese have a lot of spy satellites.
And by shooting it down over water, does that maybe give them an advantage? Obviously, an advantage of not hitting if somebody, you know, was underneath it. But can they retrieve? I know they've got divers trying to retrieve the information.
Oh, yeah. By where they – I'm familiar with the water off the coast of South Carolina. And
right.
It's generally 100, 150 feet in the area where they shot it down. So that's easily recovered. It's U.S. territorial water.
Right.
I doubt very much the Chinese are trying to recover it, A, because they don't have a submarine fleet that can go recover it. So I'm sure the U.S. will recover it, and we'll find out exactly what this is. Whether or not you and I know about it, I don't know that we will. But it was a propaganda victory, I think, for the Chinese to have this floating over our heads and the U.S. government appearing to be, you know, paralyzed by it, not shooting it down for fear of hurting somebody.
So getting back to your focus at Phantom Space, you've got, I believe, around 35 employees now. You're going to ratchet that up a little bit?
Yeah, when we close our Series B financing here this month, we should probably double that pretty quickly, and we project being close to about 100 by the end of the year, and that'll stabilize for a while until we start our production rates up in 25 and 26.
And there's a lot of competition?
It depends on how you look at it. So our main competition, SpaceX, who is hauling the freight up right now, and this is an end of the market that they really don't find very valuable, so we think that they won't compete very hard against us. We're cheaper than they are, and once we're proven, will be used in we already have, for example, a $300 million NASA launch contract for launch services, and we won four launches on that already. So NASA is going to be a big user. DOD is going to be a big user. We have a lot of DOD people coming to visit us and a lot of interest in it.
One thing we haven't specifically talked about, what is the cost factor to send up a satellite?
So it's generally around $4,000 a kilogram. That is to say about $2,000 a pound. And so, you know, that's not really a metric people buy things by. Kind of like when you buy meat in the store, you might go, oh, that's expensive. But in our case, you know, we can put you where you want, when you want, and that's got a lot of value for the same price. So our launches, we sell for $4 million a piece, and they cost us a fair amount less than that. Even our first one's a bit less than that to build.
We have not talked about your extensive racing career.
Yeah.
You're an auto racer. I mean, you have been for what? How many years?
Oh, since I was 16. So that is at least 40 years.
And well, I know you've raced some pretty neat vehicles.
Yeah, so I like drag racing. I like road racing. Mm-hmm. If it can move fast, I'll race it. I've even raced boats in the past.
Wow.
But, yeah, my real passion
How about one of those cigar-shaped boats? You ever done one of those?
No, sailboats.
They used to show in Miami Vice? Yeah.
Right. All right. Sailing is a sort of a slower race, but equally satisfying.
Okay, the new book is Breaking All the Rules, the inside story of the new space race by space entrepreneur Jim Cantrell. Jim, the book will be available at Amazon very soon, right?
Yeah, I just finished the galleys last night, and they tell me about 2 weeks before it's available electronically and about a month and a half for in print.
Very good. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and moesgallery.com presents our Monday one-on-one. Thank you very much, Jim Cantrell.
My pleasure as always.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, their 13-acre site, also home to Zocalo Village, all that wonderful merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Their website, zocalovillage.com, and it's greenthingsaz.com, 3384 East River Road, open daily in their 53rd year of business. Our telephone live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Once a month, we do our border report with longtime border observer, reporter, enthusiast, Keith Rosenblum. Keith, how are you?
Just continue to observe and even amaze myself with my observations, Bill.
Aha. Sonoran governor Alfonso Durazo said he doesn't even want to talk to a company that's proposing to build a desalinization plant in Puerto Penasco and then pipe much of the water 200 miles to Arizona. He calls it totally absurd. What the heck is going on?
Well, I have a number of reactions to that. I'll start with that. You never go into a meeting with anyone in Mexico in the public sector ever without having the right person to open the doors. So my hunch, without knowing all the antecedents here, my hunch is that the right person never opened the door. The Israelis probably just said, here, we got this great plan. Nobody else is going to do it as well as we do. And they probably managed to aggravate for diplomacy reasons. What they needed at that moment, Bill, was someone with your suave diplomatic skills that should have gone in, done all the niceties, and had a meeting take place. Because that kind of reaction is, number one, it makes them a hero to the Sonorans on an issue of sovereignty, state sovereignty, and, of course, Mexican sovereignty, which is a big deal. You don't go in without a show of deference / respect to a meeting like that. And generally, you have it open the door by somebody of stature. You just don't go in as a wannabe or as somebody who's the petitioner. So I don't know who sought to open the door, but it ought to have been Governor Ducey. It ought to have been our ambassador or the Israeli ambassador, somebody high up. So it sounds to me like this was a meeting of unequals to begin with. And it backfired. And so because that kind of reaction, a public reaction, is very rare. Generally, even when things don't work out, you don't have that kind of hostile repercussion. And that's I was surprised. I haven't seen Governor Durazo react that way to anybody ever. So it's shocking. And it's too bad because it probably has nothing to do with the merits of the project. The Israelis are leaders in the world. The Israelis are all through Africa. They're all through Central and South America, and they're all through Mexico when it comes to fabulous desal projects and drip irrigation, all that. All these things have been time-tested in the laboratory that is the Negev and throughout Israel. And, you know, I can remember 30 years ago, maybe, Governor Ocaña went, and so did a bunch of people from Sonora, went to Israel and had a fabulous experience. So something backfired. We're not privy to it, but what a bummer to have the governor of the state of Sonora essentially cast you as being villains, which is what he did. Too bad for them. Someone didn't come up with the right diplomatic nicety.
So just you're saying that there's somebody really needed to kind of, you know, schmooze, for want of another word, smooge.
I believe schmooze is a Yiddish word, and I know that you are a Yiddish speaker.
No.
And that's exactly what they needed. You don't go into a meeting like that. What it ought to have been, the final statement should have been, it was informative, we're learning. This obviously has implications for both countries, because it does. You know, the border, is, I don't have to say this to you, is this irrelevant line on the port of entry. Nogales, Sonora has... For years, used water from Nogales, Arizona. They're sharing all over. There's electricity that's been shared, water, gas, you name it. All utilities have been shared. And in times of need, you know, Tijuana has sent electricity over across the border. There's always a history of border cooperation and of people helping one another out. In this case, this would be a fascinating story. It'd be great to see the same kind of journalistic savvy applied to this story as if you read the Arizona Republic yesterday, you would have seen the extraordinary reporting job done on the county prosecutor of Cochise County, McIntyre, and his DUI arrest. The reporting on that was just fabulous. And you could tell the reporter had all of his sources in place. It was a wonderful story to read. It's a sad story, but one that was just thoroughly reported. And that's the kind of thing I would love to see on this particular story.
All right. I want to move on to, we had Congressman Grijalva as our Friday Focus interview on Friday. And he was very moved by the Jim Colby Memorial that I know you attended. You used to work for Jim Colby as one of his aides, his public relations people. You worked in the office, and Congressman Grijalva said it was just so wonderful to see so many people kind of come together, and he felt that was kind of emblematic of Jim Colby, bringing people together from both sides of the aisle.
It was a beautiful gathering, Bill. I'm one of the people that believes that funerals ought to be a little more objective. That might be because you and I are from the world of journalism. They made the speakers all made it sound like Jim had been born and had left Earth with wings on. And Jim was an incredible man. He did great things in the House. He was a success story in lots of ways. Jim also had, you know, other dimensions to him. And Jim was treated poorly by a lot of people in the House of Representatives at that time, by Tom DeLay. It was a nasty time. I guess because I'm not clear on what the purpose of a funeral service is. So this was it was a beautiful event. Senator Kelly, former Congresswoman Giffords, Juan Ciscomani, Attorney General Mays. It was a very beautiful gathering at the Methodist Church on Speedway at right by the Himmel Library. And you couldn't help but be moved by it. And the thing that also I liked a lot about it was that there were a lot of gay couples. And Jim was one of the people, you know, our lives take on, this was obviously never mentioned in the gathering, and Hector, Jim's spouse from Washington, was there. But the gathering was beautiful for that reason as well. Jim had shown that there is not only a place in public life for the gay legislator, but he had taken so many. In fact, I think that's one of the things that kept Jim from being great. The key view is that he was a good congressman. He represented the district beautifully. He was fabulous when it came to going to everybody's event, be it baptism, quinceañera, bar mitzvah, funeral, whatever it was. He represented the district, and that to me speaks worlds of him. When it came to lots of other issues, I think Jim was always troubled by, he was harassed by the issue of being a gay man. And yet he wasn't, he became kind of an inadvertent warrior for the gay cause, even though he didn't really want to be. And I think that was something that kept him, on guard and kept him from achieving what he might have achieved otherwise. It was also very nice that they had the same flag that had been flown over the Capitol at John McCain's funeral at that event. The Colby family was there. It was touching in so many ways. And as you know, there is no person who his whole life is marked by beauty and by everything being perfect. Jim was a very flawed man. Those of us who had the pleasure or, you know, honor of working for him and for the, you know, the District 5 at that time, came to see him as the complex, you know, figure that he was. But, you know, Jim was the one thing he did do, Bill, if you called him, and I used to take him to interviews with you, and I took him to all sorts of things on campus, but I also took him to gatherings at elementary schools. I also took him to places where there would be no media whatsoever, and he was still Jim Colby, and he still, when he looked at you, you were the only person in the world, and he remembered you, and this was partly a guy who didn't have his own family, really, nuclear family, but was part of a beautiful clan. He'd been born in Evanston and gone to Northwestern, things that you identify with, and so he was always kind of an outsider and in lots of ways. But anyway, I'm glad I did not know that Congressman Grijalva had those takeaways, but I'm glad he did. And he himself is a guy who can reach across the aisle and who can also, call people out. So as I said, I saw Congressman Grijalva come into the service. I was filming it actually, so that a friend who's in China could watch it in real time. That is to say, watch it live. So I never sat next to former staff members or anything, but I saw the congressman when he came in, I believe with his wife. And I said, oh, congressman, the VIP area, I didn't use that word, but I said, your seats are up in the front. And Congressman Grijalva says, nope, they aren't. And he goes and sat in the back. So I like that as well. I mean, it was kind of a funny little, side story there. But he was going to be happy wherever he was and didn't need to be where there was the focal point of attention at a gathering like that.
Well, people born at Evanston Hospital are special.
I was born there.
Jim Colby was born there. Keith Rosenblum was born there.
Lived there, and I went to Evanston Hospital for my knee injuries and see my mom, who was working there.
Yeah,
but I was not. I got born in some stupid hospital in Queens, New York.
Oh, okay. So you're not an alumni of Evanston Hospital.
No, I can't make that claim.
Okay. Anyway, we'll take a break right here. It's Buckmaster on a Monday. More with Keith Rosenblum after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Makes a great getaway, only about a three-hour drive over to a really pretty area of the Land of Enchantment. Find out about all the things to do, a lot of outdoor activities, great places to stay and eat. Visit Southwest New Mexico, spelled out, .org, for everything you need to know before you head east to Silver City. All right, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our monthly border report with Keith Rosenblum continues. Keith, I noticed that the president of Mexico has decreed there will be no more cargo airlines operating out of Mexico City Airport. He didn't say stop tomorrow. I think he said starting in the next 6 months, maybe July. But he's really trying to drum up business for the new airport that you have talked about on this program before.
Bill, because I was listening to your beautiful hold music, I was only able to catch a part of what you asked, but I think you asked about the use of the AIFA, A-I-F-A airport,
yep,
to receive new flights and cargo. And there's a really interesting story. I don't know if you said it right now in your preface, but what the president did was astonishing, and it shows how easy it is to become full of yourself. And it goes like this. The president, at every press conference, which, as you know, I listen to, and which you know I should be soon admitted to any kind of asylum for doing so, because it's 2.5 to 3 hours every morning, 5 days a week.
Oh, my.
Anyway, I know. I'm coming unglued. But I continue to observe the border, so I'm all right. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what the president says is, todo por la razón, nada por la fuerza. Everything by reasoning, nothing by force. He says, I'm not going to implement this. I'm not going to abuse my powers. He says that at every single press conference. I think that's actually a saying from Benito Juarez. I'm not sure who the origin of it. But anyway, so what does the man do? He's feeling bummed out because his pet project, which is the new airport, the Felipe Angeles Airport in Mexico City, no one's using it.
Yeah.
It has like some handful of flights every day. And so the president has created this new urgency to use the airport, and one of them is to say that Mexico, Benito Juarez Airport, the main one, is actually saturated, and therefore he signs a decree saying that all cargo now go to Felipe Ángeles. They have 104 days to move their operations, which is FedEx, DHL, UPS, everybody.
Yeah.
Which in 100 days, no one can do.
No.
It's a costly thing to do. It's a nightmare. And so the president, by decree, said that, which is, you know, that's a decree is a hard thing in Mexico to overcome. I think you can protest it, but it's going to be difficult. And so this is an example of how a guy says, this is like Animal Farm. Bill, you know, you on your staff there, you've always said everybody's equal. This is Animal Farm. We're all equal. But you know what? Bill is just more equal than the other workers at KUAT, correct? I mean, you're just more equal. And that's exactly what's happening right now, and that's what the president did with this decree. He has no basis to do it. The airport has fewer flights today than it did 3 years ago. And moreover, freight flights are only 3% or 4% of the whole volume anyway. But he's trying to get whatever he can into that airport to justify its existence. And so this is one of his steps. But it's an example of how a guy talks one agenda and walks another.
It's. I mean, how you're going to move all those freight operations? Mexico City is a huge hub for cargo activities, as you know, Keith Rosenblum, not just for the country of Mexico, but also into Central America. And then you're going to move all your out. He's given them like basically.
It reminds me of the Woody Allen line where he says it's a travesty of a mockery of a farce of a sham of a mockery of a sham. It absolutely makes no sense whatsoever. And he's doing it just as in a vindictive way. But he has, listen to what he has up his sleeve. He has all freight in Mexico and all airlines are concessions, just like TV and radio, just like you and KUAT have.
And not KUAT.
You don't do as a...
not KUAT.
You don't...
KVOI.
Oh, Jesus,
yeah.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, I know.
Shows how my...
There
shows
you go.
How I must have... I must have had a concussion. Sorry, Bill.
Okay.
Anyway.
Go ahead.
All stations are concessions, okay?
Yes,
the airways
of course.
Are a concession.
Of course.
And so what the president is doing is saying, by the way, you don't meet my terms, guess who might take a look at your concessions? So guess who's going to move real fast to placate the president of Mexico?
Yeah, I mean, and meanwhile, could he do something similar with some passenger carriers?
Yeah, of course he can. He's got bargaining chips. Of course he does. That's what you do when you're a president who connives and says one thing to appease 70% of your population and doesn't worry about alienating the other 30% because you've already got your election guaranteed.
This is an airport that it's further out of town, I assume.
Right now, because of the poor roadways, it's an hour and 20 minutes, basically, from the heart of Mexico City, whereas the Benito Juarez airport is like 15. The Benito Juarez airport to Mexico City is what LAX or
yes.
San Diego are to their cities.
Yes.
They're fabulous. This is an airport that's distant, and it might be comparable to Houston as well. And it's even though it's distant, it's also woefully under-equipped right now insofar as getting to and from. Mm-hmm. There's a beautiful airport there, just nobody using it, and it has no international flights yet at all. There's going to be a first flight. Aeroméxico is going to start going Felipe Ángeles to Houston in a couple of months.
I have flown into the Mexico City airport, and that's a good analogy with LAX. It's a basically in-town airport.
It's a wonderful facility to fly into, and really nobody wants out. And this has happened in airports all over the world. You need a combination of jabbing, benefits. If you look at Houston Hobby and Intercontinental, if you look at Paris, if you look at England, these are the same types of things that come up. And so it just becomes a jostling in which is going to work best for us. But right now, the aviation industry of Mexico has said, we're not interested in it. Thank you, Mr. President. And you know what the president has said back to them?
What?
He said, you know what I'm thinking of? He says, I think that we might actually look at making cabotage legal. You know what that means, right?
What?
That means that Southwest might one day fly between Hermosillo and Guadalajara.
Wow.
That's what cabotage is.
Oh.
And it doesn't exist anywhere in the world right now.
Hmm.
Nowhere in the world can a foreign carrier pick up people at one
yes.
foreign destination and take them to a foreign destination within the same country. How's that?
That's true.
So the president, he knows his way around strong-arming.
All righty. Okay, Keith Rosenblum, hope the new year's off to a good start for you. Thanks, Keith.
My pleasure.
All right. We'll take our final words here before we turn it over to CBS Network News and then the very popular show about Your Money with Dave Ramsey will be coming up at about 1:05. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. Hope you enjoyed our program for our Monday edition. We'll be back, do it all over again, a new show for you in about 23 hours. Until then, thanks to my engineer-producer, John, Bill Buckmaster, saying have a great afternoon.